This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. It has been nearly 5 months since an occupation in North Dakota to stop construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline began. But only in the past several weeks has the major national media taken notice. Thousands of Indigenous people and environmental activists, led by members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, have camped out near the Cannonball River. They're calling the space Sacred Stone Camp. And their effort to stop the pipeline has been met by heavy police presence and arrests. There have even been some reports of cell service being cut to the area. Still, the occupation continues to grow. The Dakota Access Pipeline was quietly approved by federal regulators, even as activists were celebrating the rejection of the Keystone XL pipeline. The Dakota Access Pipeline is only 7 miles shorter than Keystone. Today, we go live to Sacred Stone Camp to speak with one activist who's been camping there since April 1st, when the occupation began. Wiyaka Eagleman is member of the Sichangu Lakota tribe. Welcome to the program, Wiyaka.
Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, we're very excited to have you on. You're joining us from the edge of the campgrounds, where you're able to get self-service. Tell us, take us back to April 1st. What led you to begin this occupation? How many others were there with you when it first began?
Yeah, on April 1st, there was a call from Standing Rock Reservation to my people in Rosebud to come and set up camp here to resist the Dakota Access Pipeline. Our first camp was behind me on that hill over there. But due to the weather here, the wind, we moved down here by the river.
And we can hear that wind pretty strongly in our interview right now. So you've sort of have to move around a little bit since April 1st. But what prompted you, what motivated you to heed this call to come and begin this occupation in April?
This isn't my first battle. My first battle was Keystone XL. I was trying to run through my reservation, Rosebud. It's drinking water here. We get it down there too. All of our nations down south get some water. You know, it's very important that I look after my future or my kids' future.
And so, did you expect to stay this long and for it to grow this much? Today, I understand there's something like 2,000 people there?
Yeah, there's a little over 3,000 people. They come and go from all across the world. I didn't expect it to come this far, especially the construction. 70% of North Dakota's pipeline is already in the ground, 100% of South Dakota, and 40% of Iowa's pipeline is already in the ground.
And so this pipeline, which cuts across four states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois, was approved by federal regulators, even though President Obama rejected the other pipeline, Keystone XL, that you also protested against. It approved, regulators approved this pipeline. So right now, what is the status of the construction? Have you and your fellow activists managed to stop it at least temporarily, at least for now?
Yes, we were on the front lines for a whole week straight, stopping the construction from doing any more damage to the land. Across the land, straight across over there, they still have their bulldozers and backhoes. They're still there. They're just waiting on the word from the Pentagon to continue with construction. As you see, way over there, right there, there's the second camp. It's called the Red Warrior Camp, and that's where most of the people are.
I see. Wiyaka, can you give us a survey with your phone that you are on right now of the land for our TV audience? My guest, Wiyaka Eagleman, who is a member of the Sichangu Lakota tribe, is at Sacred Stone Camp. He's showing us a view of the Cannonball River and this wide open sort of prairie land that the Dakota Access Pipeline will be going through. There is a campground with, he said now, 3,000 plus people that have been set up there to attempt to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. So my guest, Wiaka Eagleman, back in his car now to protect himself and his camera and phone from the wind. Wiaka, can you link the battle that is playing out right now between activists like yourself and the U.S. government to history?
This falls back into the battle of Little Bighorn, Wounded Knee, of how the government is treating our people. You know, the land that they're on right now, it's sacred to Standing Rock. There's burial grounds, old rock cairns from back in the day. This company or the government knows where these are at because they don't live here. The people live here.
And in terms of the camp growing, tell us about how exactly other people have been joining you. You heeded the call from Standing Rock Sioux on April 1st, but I understand just in the past few weeks, other indigenous communities have sent their representatives. The camp is growing bigger. We've seen some dramatic images of, you know, people ceremonially coming in on horseback. Tell us a little bit about how the camp has been growing, particularly how other indigenous communities have seen this effort as part of a collective struggle.
It comes down to the first day when we started doing our blockades. There was only 10 of us at our camp here. And we put it out to the world to see what we're doing with resisting this company to come into the lands. And I think that's what got a lot of people's attention. There's people from all over the world that just showed up with solidarity and Standing Rock.
And for our TV audience, we have a video playing right now of the arrival of the Comanche Nation members that were greeted. There's a large bus load of people who have come in. How do they see this struggle, Wiaka, as a kind of broader struggle? How did they, I mean, this impacts North Dakota, South Dakota, it impacts the Missouri River, but why are, you know, First Nations people from Canada arriving here? Why do they see this as part of their struggle too?
You know, this, in my eyes, you know, this isn't just a Native issue. You know, this is a good start as Indigenous people to, you know, take all battles in hand. And, you know, I think it's important that all races of mankind come together, get together and see how we could work on each other's issues. This isn't the only battle right now. They can bring their struggle here and we can help them.
As far as you can tell, what is the breakdown of the activists there, Indigenous versus non-Indigenous?
There's over 87 nations represented here. As far as I know, there's more Indigenous people than whites.
What has life been like at the camp, just in terms of practical issues? You've been living there since April. You're basically camping out for nearly 5 months. Can you give me a sense of what the day-to-day life is like on the camp?
Day-to-day, you know, we try to have our wood and water stocked. We've held a fire, an open fire that's been lit for over 4 months now. We try to keep that going day and night, 24/7. You know, we take turns cooking meals. We take turns looking after the children. We sit back, we tell stories of, we try to learn the history of the land from the elders. We try to bring fun and humor into what's going on here.
And I understand the rules are pretty strict at the camp. No alcohol, no drugs, and that no weapons, etc. Is that true?
Yes, that's very true. We don't even let the tribal police in here. Behind me, we've got a pretty good security crew. They got it always fenced off. It's secured 24/7 too.
And what is that security crew's job? I mean, what are you worried about?
Infiltrators, people that don't know what's going on here, that just came here, that don't know anybody here, federal agents, news crews.
Why would you not want a news crew to come into the camp? Are you worried about the kind of news coverage that you would get?
Yeah, lately the local media has been putting false statements out there from the camp, saying that we are a violent camp. One action we had, our people, you know, we carry a sacred pipe with us in ceremony. And, you know, we were just asking our people to pray and load our pipes. And the media took it and blasted it all over North Dakota, saying that we have pipe bombs here, loading our pipe bombs. And, you know, so now the feds are going to get involved. But, you know, they don't know the truth what's going on here. They're just, all local media is doing that. And, you know, it's very understanding that big oil companies are paying North Dakota government to, you know, work against us. It's been that way for years.
What about the local residents in and around of the North Dakota area and where this pipeline will be going through? Because I understand that the majority of the pipeline will actually travel under private land, and so the company has been working with private landowners to get rights from them, but then parts of it, of course, go under the Missouri River. Do you see any solidarity from private landowners, or are most of them more than happy to let this pipeline through their land?
Most of them are, they're happy with what they got offered to them. You know, it's all about money to these landowners, especially where the buffalo roam on the north side of the river. Apparently, they don't care about the health of the buffalo, and we got eagle nestings around here. You know, we reached out to landowners. They did not cooperate. Some of them got forced into making their decision. They were either offered money or, you know, we're just gonna take your land anyway. You know, that's how this eminent domain works around here.
At this point, what do you foresee for the future of this encampment, Sacred Stone Camp? Now, for a few days, you said you were physically in the way of construction with the bulldozers, but now what's the camp's main goal? Is it mostly sort of symbolic to draw attention to the Dakota Access Pipeline?
We're trying to reach out to national media to see, or observers to come and participate and see what's happening to these people. We started out with just our own local media, and it's just shot around the world. So we are still inviting people. This camp is always going to be here. You know, it's going to be up to Congress on whether they allow them to drill under the river or not.
And so where can people find out about it? I'm sure there might be people among my audience who see what an important issue this is to them personally, and might be interested in expressing solidarity, either by coming themselves or by getting more media to cover you. Is there a website? How can people reach the camp?
Yeah, we got a website. It's sacredstonecamp.org. On Facebook, it's No Dakota Access in Treaty Territory.
Can I just ask you a personal question? You've been here since April. What has it been like for you? I mean, is your family here with you, or if you have children, are they with you? How are you explaining that to your family, etc.?
Thank you for asking that question. You know, I didn't reach out to people on my personal issue, but it's been really emotional here for me because I lost family members back home. Yes, I lost my personal family. All I have left is my kids. Over the years, it's been tough. But I made a commitment to my kids. I'm going to fight if it's for the rest of my life, for the safety of their future. And you know, I try my best to go home every now and then. It's hard. I don't have transportation. You know, I'm still living oppressed, and you know, I still have a lot of feelings inside where I still need to take care of myself. You know, it's good to have friends out there that understand where I'm coming from, because you know, this isn't easy. It's not easy to live off the land. It's not easy to be out here in the open. You know, it's, thank you for asking that question.
How many children do you have? How old are they?
I have 5 children. My oldest is 8, 6, 5, 3, and 1.
And are they with you at the camp?
No, they're with their mother.
So you feel like your work, your presence at this camp is for their future?
Yes.
And do you think that they're all very young, maybe your 8-year-old grasps why you're there?
Yeah, you know, my older children, they know why I'm here. They've spent time with me at this other camp, resisting another pipeline. They know what I'm doing. It's just, I'm worried about my younger kids, the separation, and, you know, I really hope we stop this pipeline soon so I can go home and take care of my kids.
You mentioned earlier that all your life you felt the sort of government oppression. Can you give me a little bit more detail about that, a little example of that? Because I think it's important that this is not just one issue that a lot of Native communities are dealing with, but this is one of many issues and a long-standing history, right?
Yeah, you know, the government, they place us on these reservations. You know, we have like the poorest housing rate. They take away our language. They forced our parents into boarding schools, where my uncles and aunties, you know, they were beat. They were, you know, molested in schools like that. And you know, it just got passed down to my generation, where there's a lot of alcoholism growing up. Living with, you know, no electricity, have to haul water, and also taking care of my cousins and my nieces. My generation, you know, we took care of each other. Our parents were never there, just our grandparents. And, you know, it was hard to understand how schooling went, because, you know, living out in a country like that, you don't trust anybody. You don't even trust your older relatives.
How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 28 years old.
So you feel that your generation, you've had to mostly look out for yourselves because of some of the systemic issues that have impacted your parents?
Yes.
So here you are at Sacred Stone Camp. Have you found community in the camp? Have you found, you mentioned people sitting around and telling stories and sharing oral histories from elders. Have you found a value to the camp beyond stopping the pipeline, but to your own sense of purpose?
Yes. You know, just spending time with the local community members, see how they feel about it, sitting around an open fire and visiting with, you know, the new people and seeing where they come from. I think it's important to know how each other feels about what's happening in our lives right now.
Well, we will post those websites that you mentioned earlier on our website later today. Wiyaka, I want to thank you so much for sharing this time with us, sharing, you know, sort of your own feelings about your background and why you're there. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest, Wiyaka Eagleman, is member of the Sichangu Lakota tribe. He's been living at Sacred Stone Camp since April 1st, an encampment that has basically sprung up in opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.